Welcome to The Graveyard Shift, the podcast where anything goes, as long as there's a good story to tell. Join Todd, Matt, Jimmy, and Gary as they bust myths and share advice that hopefully isn't terrible. Let's dive in.
All right. Well, welcome everyone to The Graveyard Shift. We're really excited to have all of you, our listeners, with us today. And we are going to spend some time talking about one topic, I think, that is on a lot of people's minds. So just to set this up briefly, we have a lot of funeral directors and funeral professionals serving, trying to serve families and trying to adapt to the changing funeral consumer, right? And that's been a challenge that I think we've been facing for probably a generation, trying to figure out what funerals are going to look like in the future. And one of the things that I get asked on a regular basis, and this came up recently, just a couple of weeks ago, I had one of my friends in the profession say, "Hey, Todd, I want to attract non-traditional families, but I don't want to lose my traditional families. What should I name my funeral home? And, or should I change the name of my funeral home?" It just really brought it to this really interesting point is, you know, how do I reach the unfuneral crowd, or the, you know, when we talk, think about the unfuneral crowd, what I mean by that is, if you remember back in the day, you know, Coca-Cola was dominating. If you're old enough to remember these commercials, 7-Up came out as the un-cola, right? And they stood against the colas. And I think in maybe something like soft drinks, that might really be an effective strategy. The question is, how far do we become the unfuneral home? And how far do we, or how do we stick to our traditions and stay a funeral home? So I thought it'd be a good topic for the cast. And so let's just start out here. Gary, you came from outside the profession as you got into funeral service and working at Spring Grove on the funeral home and cemetery site. Just what are your impressions about this topic, about how to meet the consumer, how to attract new markets, yet stay allied to the families that have buttered your bread so far?
Well, I don't think, having more customized, more secular funerals rejects the traditional religious crowd. And the market research I've seen is that that segment of the population is getting smaller every year that really gravitate toward that. I think 10 years ago, based on some research we did with a bunch of independent funeral homes, it used to be 35% of the population. Now it's under 25% of the population. And, you know, those people, they're not going to let go of that. They want the comfort and the tradition and the structure that gives them comfort. But a lot of times those funerals tend to be in churches. And so if you want to morph your funeral home to be non-religious so that it, you know, it's very adaptable, where you can do a wide variety of services, I don't think you're leaving the traditional crowd behind by doing that, as long as you can still do a traditional mass of Christian burial at the local church. So, you know, that's just one more segment of the kinds of services that are meaningful to people. The key is what's going to be meaningful to the family, not, you know, from the funeral home's perspective, from the family's perspective. Is it about the person? Is it about the structure and the religion they were in and the comfort that brings? I really don't think it's an either or. I mean, I wouldn't call it Jimmy's car wash, for crying out loud, but
the car wash.
Yeah. Hair care and tire center. But on the other hand,
you see Jimmy the bikini.
Yeah, we're tanning salon, but I think you can have fun with the name, and you can also be open to catering to a variety of different kinds of services, and still you're not rejecting the traditional service. It's just that's one more flavor of type of things that families find meaningful.
Good advice. Yeah. So Matt, what are your thoughts on this topic?
I think in terms of the name, I think sometimes people get stressed and overthink these things more than they need to. I think if we have a creative name, it doesn't seem like that leads to people banging the doors down to those brands. I mean, we've all seen some of them pop up. They may be an ancillary brand of a larger firm. And you look at the obit counts and it doesn't seem like they're running away with it. I wonder if those are families they would have had anyway. But, you know, that being said, an old school funeral director, you'll be hard pressed to find someone more scared of, you know, doing anything out of fear of what you're going to lose. I mean, they tried direct mail once and someone called them up and complained and then they shut it down and have never done it again. Or they put an ad in the newspaper and someone called and said, now I thought about death, and then they never advertised again. I mean, it's, I don't know if the newer, younger generation of funeral directors will maybe move away from that than we've seen in the past. But, you know, I think offering the service is what's important. And actively listening, finding the family that it's right for, and trying to educate them so even they know that it's okay to do something different. Because a lot of families just want to do what everybody else did, and they want to do what's common. And if they haven't seen something in their community that looks different, they may not be open to it. And, you know, we as funeral directors have to, we say it all the time in celebrant training, it's not about you. And there's a lot of funeral directors out there that think it has to be in the church, it has to be an open casket, it has to be a visitation, it has to look this way. And if that's their mindset, families will pick up on that, you know, and they'll do it on their own. So that's how we created direct cremation families, direct disposition families, because if they want to do something on their own or they want to do something different, I don't need you, Mr. Funeral Director. I don't need you, Ms. Funeral Director. I will just take the urn and I will go to the country club. I'll go to the hotel. I'll go to a restaurant. I'll go to an Irish pub. I'll go to a mountainside or a beach or somewhere where it's meaningful to me, and we're going to do it our way. So when we hear that families are doing that, we should do everything we can to be a part of it and to make sure it's a better experience for them and it goes better than it would be if they were on their own.
Yeah, good advice. And so, Jimmy, you're in a large metro market, competitive market. You know, when it comes to that line between how far out in front you want to be versus, you know, kind of staying in the pocket, what are your thoughts on this?
I think you have to meet families where families want to be met. Gary and Matt tagged, it doesn't have to be one or the other. My mom was a Lutheran and so very liturgical. Her service was anything but just a strictly liturgical Lutheran service. We incorporated like a celebrant training. And I think funeral homes trying to figure out, well, how do I do that? You just don't overthink it. Matt is one of the nation's best celebrant trainers. And I think you can go in and have celebrant training for your funeral directors just to prepare them for giving ideas on how to celebrate a life. It doesn't mean they have to stand up and be that celebrant, but I think that would be the most worthwhile thing that you could do as far as this topic of an unfuneral on how you can incorporate and be more flexible for families nowadays.
Yeah, I think there's some, that's good advice. And we got to dedicate a whole episode to Matt teaching us about celebrant training at some point here in the near future. We'll get that on for the first quarter. And we're going to have Gary explain his shirt to us in one episode, I think, for those guys, viewing the let's take a little detour here. And Gary, tell us about your shirt. And you got to describe it for our listeners who aren't watching it on the podcast but are listening. What do you got going on there today?
Well, it's a shirt. It's covered in skulls and very bright colors. I actually last month went to Dia de Muertos in Mexico. So we went to Mexico City and then Morelia, which is, I think, about 2.5-3 hours outside Mexico City. And it was really an unbelievable celebration. Lots of bright colors. And it's about the Mexican tradition of honoring the dead and going back. The families go back to the cemeteries and they sit all night and have conversations with each other and also with the departed. And it was really fascinating how it worked. I would describe it as almost the inverse of a New Orleans funeral, where they, you know, they start with the band and it's a dirge and they're moving slowly and then it gradually builds speed and becomes more of a celebration. In Mexico, or at least what I saw, the family approaches the cemetery and there's a band playing and they're dancing and they all bring, It's almost a 2x4 structure with the person's picture on it. And they eventually work their way into the cemetery and use that as the headstone. And it's all covered in these orange, bright orange flowers. There are millions of them everywhere. They decorate the town square. They decorate the cemeteries. It's really a very positive and exciting ceremony. And this, the first cemetery we went to, I would bet is 500 yards by 500 yards. And there were 30,000 people in it. It was shoulder to shoulder. You could barely walk. When we left, we drove past a row of buses that you could not see either end of it. Minimum 50. It may have been 100. I have no idea. They went on forever. And some of them were tourists just to see the visuals and see the ceremony. And there were family members. The person that hosted us was Andres Aguilar. And he said about 85% of the people were tourists to get the experience, and the other 15% were the families actually coming back. We went to two other cemeteries where it was later in the evening, more somber, just families gathering, and it's just about connection to the past and to the future and the family unit. It was inspiring. It was really a wonderful trip.
Well, yeah, well, thanks for sharing that, because I think, you know, the spirit of that, you know, just in your last few words there, you talk about those traditions of past and present and future kind of all wrapping up. Sounds like a great funeral to me. I mean, I think Dr. Wolfeld says, you know, start with the, you got to go backwards before you can go forwards, you know,
exactly.
And bring back those memories and those traditions and those stories. And the way that they've memorialized that in the form of that massive ceremony has got to be pretty exciting to see.
It was awe-inspiring. I would recommend you go as long as the issue there in Mexico is making sure that the transportation and the security, because Mexico can be a difficult place. But I had an absolutely fabulous time. I'm sorry, what Colonel Bailey?
I said if I knew you were there, I would have ordered a hit.
Jimmy had something to say. I don't know if it's still relevant, Jimmy.
I was just going to comment on Gary's shirt, Gary's trip to Mexico, and that, you know, we have cultures that have been doing an unfuneral for a long time, and it's us within the funeral profession that we need to be open to what that looks like and, you know, meet our families, as I started with, where they are. And so I think that trip sounds awesome, Gary, personally, and I do like your shirt.
It distracts you from my face, Jimmy. That's why you like it.
All right. It sounds good. Well, hey, you know, one thing we talked about, and one other thing when I was asked the question about, you know, how should I name my funeral home? I have a friend in the profession. They took the word funeral and cremation out of their, and the word funeral home out of their business, and their call volume dropped by 30%.
Okay. Really?
That was an expensive lesson. And they did it probably, this was maybe 10 years ago or maybe longer, but I'm going to put a little shameless plug in for a book here called Storybrand, and the 2.0 version's out. If you guys have read this, if you haven't read, it's a great book. I recommend it to our audience. I'm reading the version 2.0 right now. 1.0 I read about 5, 6, 7 years ago. But one of the premises in the book there is that if you confuse, you lose, right? So the danger, I think, is if the consumer, even if they disagree with maybe, you know, they view themselves more of a, you know, a free spirit in terms of the way that they want their funeral conducted. But if they don't understand who you are as a business, then they can't choose you. So even if they disagree, they'll go with clarity over agreement. And then you've got to let your service and your facilities and your staff and your training, you know, serve, you know, win the day for you as a business owner. But I was, you know, this brings up a good point, because we kind of settle on maybe your best advice is to leave, you know, funeral cremation services or something like that in your name. But, you know, let's talk, Gary, a little bit about how facility design kind of follows if you want to serve a little bit more of a contemporary crowd. What are the mistakes that you see funeral homeowners making in the way they've got their facilities?
Well, the biggest challenge, at least in our market, is we have a lot of individual providers or two-person companies that don't have the resources to upgrade their facilities to something where they can do a more modern or different funeral. They, you know, it's in a, we've purchased, I think, 9 in the city of Cincinnati, and the average age of the building is 100 years old. I mean, it's old school funeral homes. So I can't remember what year this came out, but Batesville did a study that talked about the fact that facilities were 3 times more important to cremation customers than they were to full body customers, because you don't have a body to look at. So what kind of environment do I want to have this facility? So I would tell you, going forward, I think I've said this before on the podcast, our long-term competitors are Marriott and the hotels and the country clubs, who have facilities that can have an event. They're event planners. And if we can't compete with that, I don't mean you have to build a country club, you know, 50,000 square foot, whatever, but you have to be able to pull off an event that's more modern, that feels comfortable. I'm going to quote one of my friends, Mark Krause, where we were building a funeral home about 10 years ago, and he said, no, you want as much natural light in the building as possible. And I said, well, my funeral directors hate that. And he's a funeral director. He said, teach him how to embalm. So, again, I can't comment on, you know, the look of the body and all that stuff, but you got to leave some of that behind if you're going to meet, as Jimmy says, meet the customer where they want to be, what kind of experience they want to have. From the traditional all the way to, no, I want to have beer trucks, or I want to have... We had a rock band inside our funeral home about a year ago because that's the experience they wanted. And it that can work in addition to a traditional service. So it plays havoc on your staff and your company trying to figure out how to make yourself that flexible. But at the end of the day, that's what success looks like.
Great. Well, hey, Jimmy, you know, as you've expanded your business, you know, what is, if you were to buy a funeral home, you know, in Fort Worth, let's just theoretically, you're going to break out the wallet and buy a funeral home, and you walk into an average funeral home, what's the first change that you think you would have to make in a facility in an average funeral home?
Less than 2 years ago, it was, this place is dark and dingy, and we're going to redo the floor, we're going to redo the walls, we're going to redo the AV. And it's a much smaller floor plan, this location, and it completely brightened it up, gave it a fresh look, and we were able to, even on a small scale, without the big square footage, we're able to have modern day technology that families just don't want, they expect.
Yeah, so brighten it, open it up, technology.
You don't have to tear down walls and put in glass exterior windows to make it more appealing. That's great if you're planning on that, and we've done that as well. But just bringing us all into where we can live stream something, where we can play our tribute video, where you know, you have a spot for your mariachi band if that's what a family wants.
Yeah. Well, good. So much more flexible facility, it sounds like. Yeah. So, hey, one thing I was thinking about too here. So, Matt, I know the celebrant training is near and dear to your heart. So as you think about your celebrant training and what that requires from staffing, as you're recruiting staff into your funeral home and people to deliver celebrant training, what have you found has over the course of your career changed in what you are looking for in people?
I think I've begun to change, you know, thinking about who needs to do what role. You know, I remember when I first started, there was a firm that a guy who knew worked at really respect the way they did thing, and he was like, they will not send out less than 5 licensees on a service. And there was something to say about that, because their licensees knew what they were doing, and I think a lot of people were not providing guidance to their associates and your unlicensed staff for things. But, you know, in a state like mine, where you have to be a licensed embalmer essentially to do anything, I mean, that creates an interesting dynamic in terms of the number of licensees you have to hire and who's available. if I was in almost any other state, I probably would be hiring more non-licensed people, hiring them based upon skill and personality, and giving them, you know, mm-hmm. different roles in which to function and do. And even in a state like mine, where, you know, we do have to be licensed. I mean, you could still have one licensee with, you know, four top-notch associates who know your stuff inside and out, who've been with you for a while. And, you know, I look for someone who's a team player. I look for someone who shows respect to their colleagues. I look for someone who shows initiative. So if it's a quiet day, you know, here's my checklist of things I'm going to accomplish today. Is there anything else you want me to add on to it? You know, they're not just sitting there saying, well, you know, I'm a funeral director and I'm just waiting. You know, all I do is meet with families and embalm and run funerals. You know, that's... it didn't work 100 years ago, and I don't think it works today. So,
skill set. I got a question, Matt. You made me think of something. What skill set, if you could pick a skill set, event planner, social worker, that if you were allowed to plug in, what would that look like?
probably the event planner, to be honest with you. I think that that's it's a mindset that. And I've seen it. People that have that mindset, that want to, that they'll come up with something creative, they'll propose it, and they'll know how to articulate it to a family, that they'll want to embrace it. And I think, you know, a lot of us, you know, get afraid of that. Fundamentally, at the end of the day, I think if we bring it back to telling the person's story and doing it well with gracious honesty and creating journeys for the people who are grieving, you know, whether we do it in a traditional looking funeral or an unfuneral, if that's the central component and the heart of what we do, I think that thing is going to walk away being well taken care of and well served. The thing for us is having a chance to be part of doing that and making sure it happens. So when you have that unfuneral family, if they're, we're just going to do a cremation and we're going to go have a party on our own, and someone has that event planning skills where they say, well, what kind of event are you going to have? We're going to have a cookout, a barbecue. Okay, well, are you going to be like cooking all day, or are you going to be interacting with your guests and hearing the stories? Oh, well, you know, I'd like to, well, what if I get a, you know, a caterer to come in and cater it for you? Oh, that might be nice. Well, what if before we started having everyone drinking, we set some chairs up and had everyone sit down and have a podium, and then we, for 20 minutes, you know, we reflect on your mom's life and tell the story and kind of put the focus of why we're there for that day and give people a starting conversation mm-hmm. for the rest of the afternoon. Well, that might be nice too. I mean, you know, sometimes we just accept that they're going on their own without giving them an alternative and telling them what we can do for them. You want to go to the country club? Yeah. We could go with you. You want to go to the beach? We can go with you. You know, you don't like our facility. You're looking for something different. You know, have funeral, we'll travel. You know, that's.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like that.
Yeah, I think it's. Yeah, that's it's his new marketing slogan. Have yeah, funeral,
I'm walking we'll in that URL right now.
Yeah. So, hey, Gary, you when you guys put your event center in and expanded it here in the last few years, how did that change things in your business?
Well, it was really about catering is the wrong term, but serving the existing clientele. We have and always have had a significant African-American clientele that want to have a repast. And so having a space where you can get 100 to 150 people that can gather and have that that community get together. But it was about providing the right gathering space. And again, recognize the competition is moving to other event folks as opposed to some of the traditional funeral homes that don't have the ability to do that. It really dramatically changed it. I mean, we're generating a significant amount of revenue because we provide that convenience factor. We're a sort of combination. We have both funeral and cemetery operations. And so the family can come, do a visitation, do a gathering, whatever, go do a burial and come back, or any subset of that where the family can come back, where there's plenty of parking. There's plenty of, you know, some of the other challenges the other funeral homes in our area have to overcome. It just makes everything so much easier and so much more convenient that you're not having to go from here to here to here. We're going to take a procession from whatever. It really has improved the quality of the service we can provide. And at the end of the day, we can also do a wider variety of things depending upon what the family wants. So I would say it's the single biggest investment and best investment we've made in my 20-year career at Spring.
One thing, I'm going to say it. I think there's like politics. I always talk about the third rail. I'm going to talk about the third rail maybe in funeral service. I'll throw this out there. So what do we think about pews in visitation spaces?
Oh,
I don't like them.
I have two comments. One, we took them out of our main funeral home, the where we serve most of the clientele, to give us more flexibility. In our African-American funeral home, we actually moved the pews there because that clientele wants a more church-like feel. And so it was perfect. We got another event space at the main funeral home, and then our African-American brand has a more traditional space. They have both. They have one that's flexible and one that's traditional, and we let the family decide which one's the best fit for them.
Awesome. Jimmy and Matt, comments on pews? Jimmy
and I'm not a big pew fan. We do have a couple of locations left that do have pews. Pretty old school, right? That's how it was. But 100% more flexibility to have some chairs, and they're a hell of a lot more comfortable. You know, at least the cushion ones are.
No kidding. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I know of a guy who out in the Pacific Northwest recently put them back in and said that he got good feedback from the community about it. I'm not there to hear it, but for me, I think it just, that sends a message. I mean, when you walk in the room, I mean, we often call them chapels, and then you have pews. Like, if someone is not looking for a very traditional funeral, if they're looking for something different, it's hard to call a community gathering when you're doing it in a place with pews and, you know, stained glass windows that are not sectarian and things like that. I think we're better served.
We've got cocktail tables that we can set up, you know? I mean, you need to be more flexible.
Yeah, and Todd, one comment on that before we move on. The one thing that I've talked to a whole bunch of people that have built funeral homes, rebuilt funeral homes, renovated them. The one thing that we consistently underestimate is storage space. Because if you're going to have all that furniture, you got to have space to store it. If we're doing tables, we're doing that.
Yeah.
You know, or we're doing cocktail tables, as Jimmy said, or we're laying out folding chairs, whatever. You have to have enough space. And I went and visited a funeral home that is very successful. I'm sure they're doing hundreds of services, and they had pods in the back of their funeral home because they had no place to put all the furniture they needed to put in the various spaces. So just if you're thinking about renovating or you're thinking about building, don't underestimate storage space.
Man, that's great advice. Like buying a 100-year-old home and then you go to put all your clothing in the closet, you find that your closet's like 2 feet by 4 feet, right?
Exactly.
Kind of limits that. Hey, I wanted to wrap up with this episode with just with one question, because I think this is, I think there are funeral directors out there and funeral homeowners and funeral professionals alike that would like to make maybe a move maybe they feel stuck. Maybe they feel like they're kind of seeing signs that they want to make some moves towards maybe, and I'll use the word modernizing their approach, or maybe coming into more in alignment with consumer trends. I want to throw this out to you first, Jimmy, and then we'll go to Matt and then Gary. Where should I start? What do I have to do? Where should I start? How, you know, to make that first move to becoming a little more up to speed, maybe with where some of the public is with their thoughts about funerals?
I think have somebody that is not you come in, walk around your facility, and ask yourself, can I serve different people from different walks of life here in this funeral home? Doesn't cost a lot to replace the carpet in the big picture of things, put a fresh coat of paint on, change up some of that old furniture that you have from 1965. It's better than a $3 million renovation, right? So I think getting perspective from an outsider looking in, because you get stuck in your four walls and you stop seeing things that need to be done in your facility.
Great point.
Oh, excellent advice. Matt, where would you start? What's the best advice you'd give someone looking to become unstuck in their tradition?
If you've not done so already, I would say send yourself and your entire staff to Celebrant training. I mean, that's step one. I think that the skill sets, the reframing your mind of what people in grief need and finding ways with both a traditional and non-traditional, if we like those words or not, service, I think there's a lot of skills that come from that. And then second, I'd say start building your toolkit. You know, find things. If you have an old building with pews that can't be updated, then partner with a local country club or you know, find a caterer, find those third-party folks that you can work in that you put together the package so you're not afraid to offer it to a family. So you know that if it comes down to it, as easy as it is for us to pick up the phone and talk to the church secretary and the sexton of the cemetery and the vault company and you know, the casket distributor, we could pick up the phone and talk to the caterer and the florist and the AV guy and, you know, whoever else is necessary to, you know, create an unfuneral or a more contemporary experience for them.
Awesome. Great advice. Gary, if you were looking to try to work your way into the unfuneral crowd just a little tighter, what would you recommend?
Well, I think the very first thing I do is what Jimmy talked about, which is just, and I hope this doesn't come off as sexist, I would have a woman do that because women are much more in tune with the vibe of a place than men are in general, not universal.
Yeah, look at your office.
But the, what?
So yeah, look at your office.
No kidding. It's my, yeah, this is my house too. It's terrible. Yeah, it's the man cave. There is clearly not a woman involved in any of that. but I would tell you that beyond that, giving your funeral directors the freedom to fail, to let them know, look, we need to evolve, and I'm going to support you. Because at the end of the day, the quality of the service is what Matt has talked about active listening in the arrangement room and the willingness to go outside the box of what you've done before and try something different. You have to be, as the owner, as the manager, whatever, willing to support those decisions, knowing that one out of 50 of them are going to blow up in your face because we didn't know how to do this right, or, hey, we didn't get that particular ethnic cultural background correct. Because long term, if you're going to serve that clientele, your funeral directors have to be doing what Matt's talking about, active listening and creating a service that's meaningful to them, even if it's outside their past experience. Being willing to push the envelope, knowing, hey, every once in a while it's not going to go the way you want it to. So that's kind of the follow-on, the cultural follow-on to the refresh of the facility.
Awesome. So we get independent look at the facility. Find someone that will tell you honestly, right, Jimmy? And Matt, get some training. You know, Gary, it starts with retraining your mind. And Gary, the freedom to fail and let go and let your staff, you know, put a little fun back in the funeral, right? So
absolutely.
Awesome.
The unfun funeral.
Yes. Well, hey, gentlemen, thanks for another, and I use that term with all due respect and very loosely. Hey, thanks for another great segment here. Appreciate you all very much. Hey, with our listeners, you know, a lot of great advice being shared here on the Graveyard Shift. These gentlemen have gone through, walked the walk, have had to make hard decisions, have had to modernize, update, let go, all the things that they've had to do to help make their businesses successful. So I'd say, hey, take something you learned today and put it to use, right? And with that, also, don't keep us a secret. If you have some feedback for us, please send it to thegraveyardshift@passari.com. With that, everyone, have a great day.